Hello to our listeners. Welcome to the Women Governance Trailblazers podcast, where we listen to the journeys of trailblazing women in the corporate governance field, their passions, struggles, and commitment to improving how companies and boards function. My name is Liz Dunshee, and my co-host is Courtney Camlett.
Hi, everyone.
Courtney and I are both passionate about governance, and we want to spotlight some of the trailblazing women who share that passion. We love connecting with guests from different paths and industries to hear their perspectives on what surprised them in their career and where they think the field of corporate governance is going. For this episode, we are delighted to be talking with Sharon Binger. Sharon is Managing Director, Chief Compliance Officer, and Head of Litigation at Silver Lake, which is a global PE firm focused on the tech industry. And Sharon is also a member of the Noom Board of Directors. Prior to joining Silver Lake in 2017, Sharon served in the SEC's Enforcement Division. Her roles included Assistant Director of Enforcement in the SEC's New York office and Regional Director of the SEC's Philadelphia office, where she administered the Commission's enforcement and regulatory programs for the Mid-Atlantic region. Sharon began her career as a litigation associate at Wilkie Farr and Gallagher in New York. And in addition to her Noom directorship, Sharon also serves on a number of nonprofit boards, including the Silicon Valley chapter of the American Leadership Forum. Sharon, we are thrilled to get to speak with you today. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
We're happy to have you. Your career has spanned private practice, government service at the SEC, and now a leadership role at Silver Lake. What were some of the pivotal moments that shaped your path? And what advice do you have for women navigating leadership roles in litigation, corporate governance and compliance, especially in a dynamic field like private equity?
When I started my career, I did not have a fixed idea of what kind of law that I wanted to practice. And I think going in with an open mind, and I joined a firm where we were forced, quote unquote, to do a little bit of everything, which ended up being a gift to me because I had my first experience working on a white collar case, which I loved. And that then led to my interest in securities work, where I went from my law firm to the SEC and really had a wonderful experience there, becoming a deeper expert on all things securities enforcement and regulatory, which then took me to my current role, where I am responsible for those aspects of our program at a private equity firm. So I would say I fell into it with luck and an open mind, and my advice would be to keep an open mind. Don't assume that you are going to love the things that you think in theory that you might love, because that could turn out to be wrong. And most importantly, find something that you do love, because I am probably one of the rare lawyers who say that I do love the work that I do. And I attribute my enjoyment of it to really having an interesting and fun career.
That really does turn something from work into more of a fun enjoyment, especially when you're really passionate about something.
Yeah, and the intellectual challenge, I think, is also so important, because I find every day I'm still learning something new and interesting in a lot of different interesting fields. And so I think that is really an important thing to strive for.
Well, that is great advice and a great perspective. So you have seen a lot, obviously, over the course of your career. What corporate governance trends and best practices are you observing today? We're in such a rapidly evolving business environment, different opportunities, different threats every day. Are you seeing anything new or unique in your role?
I think AI has got to be the elephant in the room for all people in governance right now, in part because it's so transformational and in part because it's new. And so there is no blueprint to follow in terms of what does good governance look like. We have been in a learning and really educational phase in terms of not just what the risks are, but what are the products, what are the use cases that we can do with AI internally and with all of our portfolio companies. And I would say the best practices that I have been focused on right now are not being prescriptive because we could create a prescriptive approach and tomorrow that will no longer work for any number of reasons, whether it's because the products have changed or the use cases have changed. And so really identifying the risks that we are looking to address in using AI, which might include protecting confidential information, ensuring that the outputs are accurate, assuring that the use cases make sense for our business goals, and then really evaluating each tool with a fresh set of eyes and with a cross-functional perspective, because AI is also one of those interesting areas that really touches on so many different areas of expertise that it takes a lot of coordination to be able to appropriately evaluate the benefits and the risks. So on the opportunity side, I would say a lot going on with AI. On the threat side, I very much spend a lot of time on cyber. And from a national security perspective, depending on what the particular company does, which, I work with companies in all different industries, the national security risk might be higher or lower depending on what sector the company is in, who their customers are, what kind of data they have. But the governance there, I would say, can also be really existential to companies because having an incident could create a lot of business harm for companies and their IP could potentially be at risk, for example. If that IP is of interest from a national security perspective. So lots of different considerations there. And I think from a governance best practices perspective, it's really about understanding what risks your particular company faces and how to best mitigate them. And then having board involvement and oversight and adequately resourcing the function. I think all of those are really, among so many others, I could go on forever on this topic, but all really important governance considerations.
From the oversight and resourcing perspective, are you seeing or do you have a view on whether companies should have dedicated technology committee?
Yeah. No, I think what we are seeing is depending on the company, there is no formula right now, and the companies are experimenting with what might work for them. I would say most frequently we see that falling under the audit committee, but not always. Some companies do have technology committees. And the other thing is having some kind of cyber expertise on a board is a really newer concept, and thinking about how to best leverage and integrate that expertise, whether it is a dedicated committee, whether it's something broader than that, I think is something that companies are very much grappling with right now. In some ways, it's also about the information the board is getting and making sure that they are asking the right questions about the vulnerabilities and the types of assessments that are happening and whether there's sufficient resources. I think it's all part of a really big undertaking for companies that's really important.
Yeah, I think it's incumbent upon companies where they don't have necessarily a cyber expert on the board to make sure that the board is getting education and the right type of education, understand sort of the base issues underlying all of that, especially AI.
Yeah, we actually also really advocate for companies to do tabletop exercises with both the board members and the senior leadership so that when or if an incident occurs, they're not learning that on the spot, that they've been through that, they understand the drill. The companies have identified what experts they might draw on in that event and are really as best prepared as they can be.
Yeah, you mentioned risk a couple times in your response. One of the things that I think of when I think of compliance programs is there's a very heavy regulatory and enforcement environment. And so how do you think that impacts compliance programs, especially in sort of today's changing environment?
Can I say, with respect to today's environment, I have no idea whatsoever what to expect, although I think we're all trying to read the tea leaves and see. It's a little early, I think, to have any firm ideas. I think there is a school of thought that there will be massive deregulation and compliance programs can take a step back. That's not my personal view. I think, first of all, these things are always a pendulum, and so it doesn't make a ton of sense to undo what you've spent years doing only to then redo it again. But also, I think about it more as what our responsibilities to, in my case, our customers, our investors and our portfolio companies. And what does that look like? It's how do we implement best practices? And so I think our plan is very much to stay the course and continue to try to build out really strong compliance program, continue to iterate it in the coming years with an understanding that I think many experts would say maybe there's less enforcement risk, but who knows? And that's not necessarily the only reason you want to build out a great program.
Well, maybe less enforcement risk in the US, but
Yes.
internationally, it's a different level. So it's not easy.
That is an excellent point. And I think ESG in particular is creating that tension, but that could be a topic, a whole other very long topic.
Yeah, don't get me started on CSRD. That was a lot of headaches for a while.
How was your experience serving on the board of Noom, which is a privately held company, and your other nonprofit organization service experience influenced your approach to leadership?
I would say there's been a lot of different aspects of development for me. One being when you're in a boardroom, there is a strategy that you're responsible for executing on, and you need practical, real, executable advice. And from that perspective, it does help me understand that governance has to be able to be followed. And I learned a lot of this when I came from the SEC into private equity as well, that oftentimes rules and governance structures sound really great in theory, but when you go to try to put them in place, it becomes a much different story. And you really have to be, I think, as somebody who is a governance professional, mindful of providing advice that people can execute on, that facilitate the business needs, and also are reasonably tailored to whatever requirements are in place. So it's very much a learning curve of trying to be as practical and commercial as you can be, which I think sitting on a board has highlighted. And then the second point I would highlight for myself has been, in particular with my nonprofit boards, working alongside people of completely different professional backgrounds, experiences, nonprofit, private sector, public sector, has been a great learning opportunity for me to consider diverse perspectives, to look at different leadership styles and different priorities from all different perspectives. And I do think I take a lot of that back with me as part of my leadership style as well.
That's hugely important. And I'm sure along the way, in addition to leading, you've also played a role in mentorship. How do you actively support and mentor the next generation of women leaders?
Mentorship is so important for me, both maybe in large part because I have been fortunate enough to really benefit from it throughout my career. And one thing I always want to highlight for women is that I have gone through almost my entire career until my most recent job without really having any female mentorship. And my mentors have been amazing, and they've all been male, and they have really served me well. And I want to make sure I can have that same impact for other people as, and we think about sponsorship maybe even a little bit more so than mentorship in terms of understanding people's professional objectives, helping them meet them. So I really look to try to support others in their professional journeys. And it's almost paying it forward, giving back what I have been fortunate enough to receive over time. And I will say, I think as a mentor, one of the best gifts you can give to your mentees is really open feedback. I think that's probably one of the things that I benefited the most from, because if you want to get better at what you're doing, you need people to be honest with you and tell you what you could be doing better. And so that is probably one of the, nobody loves to give the hard feedback, but probably one of the things that I have identified as being the biggest gift of mentorship that you can give to others.
I'll say I started out my career at the SEC and then went to a law firm. But at the SEC, I had an amazing mentor, as did a number of people, Marty Dunn, who is no longer with us. But he was great at the open feedback, but he also really compelled people to also want to be a mentor because of the way he treated people.
Yeah, I love that. I think that is so important. And everybody can mentor others in different ways. I learn from my team all the time. I think they mentor me in lots of different ways. So it's not a one-way street. And to have a learning mindset in everything we do. I think there's so many things we can learn from others that we work with.
Well, this is definitely a year of active learning and active leadership.
Yeah, I think that keeps our jobs interesting, right?
Always, always.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Sharon, so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you all for having me. It's been a really interesting conversation and really glad that you all are focused on this topic. I think it's such an important one.
Yeah, we really enjoy talking to people and learning from others too. So it's been great. For those of
Thank
you who
you.
are listening, we want to thank you as well. Please subscribe to Women Governance Trailblazers on whatever platform you use for podcasts, and we would love it if you would rate us while you're there. In addition, if you know a Women Governance Trailblazer who you think would be a great guest on the show, feel free to ping Liz or me on either LinkedIn or by email.